Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The Democratic Party primary for Syracuse City Mayor is Tuesday, June 24th, with early voting starting on June 14th. My guest today is one of the three candidates contesting that primary, Syracuse City Deputy Mayor Sharon Owens. In addition to serving as Deputy Mayor in the Ben Walsh administration, Ms. Owens is also the board president of Blueprint 15, which is helping to lead the effort to redevelop the East Adams Street area following the tearing down of Interstate I-81 in the city. Note that I also hope to have the other two primary candidates, Joel Majok and Pat Hogan, on the program prior to the primary. But for now, Deputy Mayor Owens, welcome back to the program. It's good to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for making the time. Really appreciate it. So I'm going to start with just a very general question. Do you have a vision for the city of Syracuse over the next four and perhaps the next 8 years that you can articulate?
Yes, absolutely. Our city is entering into a moment, and my campaign is called Maximizing the Moment, where we're going to see some transformational things happening for our city and in the region. But specific to the city, the I-81 project really is humming around the city. You can't move anywhere without seeing that. It's going to be transformational for how our community looks and feels. The next job and the next mayor is going to be absolutely keeping this city moving and open for business. And so I'm prepared for that moment for our city with 81, particularly with Micron in particular, and the economic opportunity for our city. You know, it's no secret in the 90s when our new process gears, Carrier, GE, Miller Brewery all started closing down. We had a really strong and thriving middle class, particularly for people of color who were able to send their kids to college. And those kids came back to Syracuse, and many of them with a college degree still worked in those factories because they were great paying jobs. And we really missed the ball when we transitioned and those jobs started leaving, that there was no plan moving forward. And here comes Micron with another economic opportunity for us, new industry for us. And I'm really proud of the work I'm doing to really prepare not only for the 81 work, but for Micron work, our individuals and our community to be prepared to have that opportunity for that work. So the vision for our city is to absolutely keep growing. We're on a trajectory. I think we've done a great job in this administration to really work on our infrastructure. You have to have a growing city that's based on solid infrastructure. We've been doing that, whether it's roads, sidewalks, lighting, working on our water pipes and the like. What my vision is really to improve the human condition as we move forward with the growth of the city. Because we can grow and grow and grow, but if our human condition is not keeping pace, then we're missing the mark again. And I'm just committed not to missing the mark of a moment of growth for the city that leaves people behind.
I want to pick up on a couple of the things you mentioned there a little bit later in our conversation. But let me focus in on you mentioned some accomplishments of the Walsh administration there that you are part of. And I wanted to ask you some specific questions about how you would be different or similar to that. And the first one is leadership style. How would you characterize your leadership style? And in particular, do you think it would be different from Mayor Ben Walsh? Is that everybody's different person? You know, how would you characterize your leadership style?
Well, I think my leadership style is based on my experience. I mean, people ask the question of what makes you different from Ben Walsh. Well, we're clearly two very different people. He's a 40-something white man, and I'm a 61-year-old black woman with the experiences that come with being a 61-year-old black woman. And so my perspective on life is a little different than his, and just experience. But we have the same principles, which I think is important for leadership. Leadership for me is steeped in a 40-year career of executive leadership in managing people, places, and finances. And so I'm coming in with that on the ground experience of how do you identify problems? How do you find solutions? How do you work with people? How do you collaborate? And that is my style. If I am the person in the room who thinks I have the all the answers, then that room is not effective. That room is not full, and I need to make sure I have other voices in that room. We have very similar styles. He is, I have a little bit more fire in me, I think. I've learned a lot from Ben Walsh and when to release that fire and when to knock. And so I've learned a lot from him in that. His campaign was Rise Above, and sometimes I'm like, Mayor, you're being a little bit too nice on this one. And so, I have been the collaborator. We have come through a time in our community where we weren't working together and we were suffering from that. And I think through my experience with the Walsh administration, I understand that collaboration is the best way to move forward. I will continue that collaboration. I'm doing it now on a day-to-day basis. When I complete this conversation with you, I go back to work, and that work is about collaboration, initiative developing, working for the city, the residents of the city of Syracuse.
You know, you mentioned being a Black female, and I wanted to ask you a sensitive question about that. I was going to do it later, but I'll do it now because you brought it up. When Stephanie Miner became mayor, she was the first woman mayor of any of the big five cities in the state. And those would be, you know, New York City, Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo. When it comes to Black mayors, only Albany and Syracuse have not yet had Black mayors. And that's despite their large non-white populations. I have to say, I was surprised by this. And I would have thought that this is something that would have been a priority for the Democratic Party in Syracuse a little while ago. And maybe it's just that the stars haven't lined up. I don't know. But do you think that race is important in this election, sort of given the times right now, and should it be?
When I talk to individuals in the community, they are excited about the prospect of Syracuse moving into a space of electing someone of color, particularly an individual, Black individual, Black female. Many of those folks are still smarting over the federal, the national election with Kamala Harris. I run, and I mentioned my Black female, of who I am, because that's who I am. And I'm proud of being Black, being a female, being a mom, being a mother of a son with a disability, being just the individual who fell in love with the city and stayed here. My qualifications are my qualifications, but I stand in full pride and understanding of the significance of my being a woman and being a Black woman running in this race.
Okay. All right. Back to leadership styles and thinking about the Walsh administration, a couple questions related to that. First of all, I would never expect you to throw your boss under the bus, but is there anything that stands out to you during the past 8 years with Ben Walsh that you wish, with hindsight, the administration could have had a do-over on?
There are a couple things. One was I think we're getting some momentum now on the housing authority issue. We're looking really to be able to close on some significant progress over the summer. We have been kind of, I and others in the administration had kind of seen some concerns we had about capacity and ability for the existing staff at the Housing Authority to take on such a mountain. Now, this is across all of the housing, the reformation plan of the housing. It's a $1 billion project. None of us have done anything like this. So to bring, it would be critical to bring in all the capacity necessary to do it. And we were just not seeing that willingness to bring on the help needed to do it, and thought that it was really putting the the progress in jeopardy. And I think the urgency that we have seen lately from the mayor, I would have pulled that trigger a little sooner. About 2 years ago, we saw it coming. And so there was urgency. He was very clear, been very clear from, you know, late last year into early this year. That should have happened probably 2 years ago.
Okay. And then thinking about your two opponents in the primary, Pat Ogan and Joel Majak, in terms both of not only leadership style, but also policy priorities, what are the most important differences between you and the two of them?
I think that for me, I have been engaged throughout this city and not just, you know, focused on particular neighborhoods or particular populations, but my engagement has been in basically because of the work that I must do right now. And it's been engaged across the city. It is ironic to me that one of my opponents in particular always talks about my lack or our lack of transparency. And I think we've been the most transparent administration with dashboards and information, particularly when it came to the ARPA funds. We have dashboards, how we're spending money, how we plan to spend money. This recent budget situation we've been through is clearly not transparent. So to speak about my lack of leadership and transparency, I led the Reimagining Policing initiative under the former governor. There was the executive order for reimagining policing after the murder of George Floyd. Mayor Walsh turned to me and said, "Sharon, you're going to lead that process." Now, remember, all municipalities that have governance over law enforcement, DA, county, city, municipalities all around us had to engage in a plan of how they were going to move in looking at how policing happened in their communities. Mayor Walsh turned to me and said, "You lead that charge." The county looked to me, the DA's office looked to me, and we initiated what had to be a dozen community meetings for transparency to make sure that the community's voice was heard through that process, and created a dashboard to ensure that people knew exactly what our plan was going to be. While all municipalities had to participate, quite frankly, many municipalities phoned it in. But we did not. Our community would not allow us to. And when we talk about my style, it is very much focused to going into the community and hearing their voices, because that's where I come from. Of the 40 years I've been working in Syracuse, 30 of them have been on the ground in neighborhoods. And that is the aspect that I bring to City Hall. I have been bringing to City Hall and will continue to do so as mayor.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Sharon Owens. Syracuse City Deputy Mayor is running for mayor in her own right and will appear on the ballot in the Democratic primary on June 24th. So, Deputy Mayor, you mentioned this recent round with the budget process before the break, and I did want to ask you a question about that. The issue of the city's budget, it's become quite controversial, and recent days and weeks. It's a moving target that's being determined as we speak. And you and I are talking on Wednesday, May 21st. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about that. And I'll try to be as brief as I can, but I want to provide some background for our listeners. So just as background, and correct me if I don't have something right here, but my understanding is the mayor proposed a roughly $348 million budget. It involved a 2.2% spending increase and a raise of 2% in the property tax rate. It also drew some money from the city's general fund, and the city's general fund is essentially its savings account to cover the remaining deficit of that budget. The general fund is estimated to be at around $120 million at the end of the fiscal year. That's compared with $50 million when Mayor Walsh first took office. I believe a lot of that money came from the support for COVID that was provided to the cities from the federal government. But anyway, the council rejected that proposed raise in taxes and lowered the proposed budget spending by 2.4%, or about $16 million. Is that, I know it's a lot more complicated than that, but is that basically correct so far?
All the marks.
Okay, great. All right. So my first question for you is, how unusual is it for the city of Syracuse to dip into its general fund? Sometimes it's called a rainy day fund to cover a budget. Is it something that hardly ever happens? Is it something that periodically happens? I mean, how weird is this?
No, it is unfortunately a reoccurring need of the city because of the cost to run the city versus the revenue we're able to generate. Again, Grant, the major sources of revenue for the city of Syracuse are sales tax, which we saw some increase in, but it's trending to level off, and property tax. And again, you know, when you look at the whole pie of property in the city of Syracuse, 48% of those property owners actually pay taxes because, as in most cities, you know, hospitals, educational institutions, which are all important economic drivers, are tax exempt. And so there has always been a gap in that revenue versus the expenses to run the city. And so that is why that rainy day fund is important to be able to fill that gap. And as you mentioned, when we had come into office, it was $50 million there. And through wise use of those ARPA funds and other revenue generating opportunities, it's at $120 million. And so, no, that is not an unusual occurrence to dip into that fund.
Okay. And do you think that the budget as proposed by the mayor gets it about right? Do you have any big issues with it?
I mean, those increases that you mentioned, when we look at the increase, it was about an $8 million increase from the previous budget. I'd like your listeners to understand that many of those costs are not controlled by the taxpayers or city government. It is pension costs that are rising. It is insurance costs that are rising. So those are costs that we do not control. There are other costs that included positions that we wanted to bring on, initiatives we wanted to bring on. For example, we've heard from our business community that our permitting process just takes too long. So we responded with outsourcing that permitting to professional firms who have stamp licenses to do building reviews. And so we have about six of those. We put that money into the budget so that we can continue to outsource that and get that turnaround much faster than what we can do with a couple staff people. So we didn't arbitrarily add positions in order to just, you know, bring on positions, but it was to increase the efficiency. You know that we have started this red light with the school buses, the red light enforcement, so people are not passing school buses or school zones. But from a legal perspective, when you are identified by those can't, there has to be a adjudication process to ensure that it was you, it was your car, and give you an opportunity to dispute that. That takes people to do. And so while it appeared that the council was in favor of these red light initiatives to protect our students and our children, they are cutting the very mechanism by which we would be able to enforce it. And so that's kind of where we stand, you know, and their cuts of $16 million. I'd heard from many people who have been in city government for a long time, and a cut of that magnitude is unprecedented. I think, Grant, the thing that was most egregious to me was, yes, we had hearings, but Joe Cecil or Mike Mons did not hear in a hearing that they were going to cut $3.5 or $2.5 million. But before you had your vote, you could have very easily picked up the phone and said, we are going to cut $3.5 million. Chief Cecil, what is going to be the impact of that? And how can you help us get us to that number? None of that happened. And I think that is the most egregious, because our department heads and our departments are readily available for any ask, particularly of counselors, but not to get a phone call before that vote was the most troubling part of it.
Well, so this is a tangled question, but I want to try to simplify it as much as I can here. And just to see, I have some other things I want to ask you about some other issues. So maybe if you could just be really brief here.
Sure.
I would assume that it is not a unreasonable assumption to think that the city's budget situation is likely to get better as Micron unfolds. Would you agree with that?
It is our hope that it, particularly because of sales tax.
Right.
If we can generate more housing, that can be taxable, yes.
Okay. All right. So one last question on this, and we've got about 7 minutes left. I want to save some time for the other things, but it does seem to me that there are obviously some political questions suggested by the context of this budget issue. You're the mayor's deputy. You're running for mayor. The other two Democratic candidates are both on the city council. One of them is acting as the council president. I'm trying to see a possible political angle here, and the one that I can discern is that they can try to say that, hey, look, the administration wanted to raise your taxes, but we stopped that, or I stopped that. Frankly, I could see that working in a general election. I'm a little more perplexed about how it works in a Democratic primary. But do you think that what is going on is election-oriented at all? And if it is, can you state in a sentence what you think the intended message is?
I would hope that it's not, but I don't know how it's not politically motivated when the first public response from Pat Hogan in particular was not from him to the press as a counselor, but it was to him to the press from his political campaign. It was a press release from his political campaign. You have not seen that from me.
Okay.
My job as deputy mayor.
Okay. I want to come back to the beginning of our conversation and the fact that you know, the very tagline for your campaign is to keep, you know, keep, what is it? Keep moving forward and
maximize the moment
And I wanted to ask, I've been thinking a lot about that actually. And I wanted to ask you a question about it. It seems to me that both the redevelopment of the East Adams area and Micron, they're both great opportunities and huge opportunities, but I've also worried about just the degree of disruption that both of them are going to bring. And it would seem to me that whoever the new mayor is, they're going to have to manage that disruption very deftly. And if you could just say a few more words about that, I would be very keen to hear them.
Absolutely. I started our conversation by saying that the next mayor's, one of the priorities is going to be keeping the city moving, keeping the city functioning, because the what's going to be happening with 81, you can see it along Erie Boulevard. Not only just what's happening with 81, but we're doing our own infrastructure work on multiple sides of the city. That this is the most I think anyone in Syracuse in a long time has had to deal with traffic detours, and it is construction. So my priority is conversations around businesses on those corridors, how people are going to get out to work, what are going to be the routes for children on buses and traveling and walking during that time. It is going to be critical for this next mayor. And I have the existing, I meet with the DOT on a regular basis. I was just on a panel with that team regarding the environmental impacts and how we can protect people as they move towards the next project, which will be Almond Street. So I'm very much in the weeds when it comes to the day-to-day implications of communicating to our community. Syracuse, this is all going to be worth it. Our city is going to look and feel completely different, especially when for the I-81 project. And for Micron, we cannot talk about poverty seriously until we're able to get people work that increases the household incomes of the people there, not only individuals but all individuals in a household. That's how we address poverty.
Yeah, and that was actually right leading into what would probably be my last question for you, is the Micron opportunity is huge. You mentioned these other companies, Carrier, the Crucible. I don't know if you mentioned that one or not, but you mentioned several others. Yeah. And this is bigger than all of them. And so what would be your biggest worries about that? I know what your biggest hopes are, but what are your biggest worries? Is it that this happens and poverty keeps getting more and more isolated and concentrated in a way? I mean, what do you worry about this?
What I worry about is what I work the hardest against, and it is to ensure that we're preparing people in the city of Syracuse for these jobs. I have always said to individuals in the rooms that we have to demystify what the jobs actually are. You know, these big fabs are big clean rooms with, you know, at OCC is looking to train individuals right now. So it's not complicated. Many of those jobs are not complicated. So how can we prepare people? My biggest fear and worry is that we cannot miss the mark on this and leave folks behind in this amazing opportunity. And it's not just Micron. It's all the residual opportunity that's going to happen too. And we have to get the transportation right to make sure we can get people to Micron and other industries that are going to be opening up in our community. And so that is critical as well. I cannot hope. I'm just a hopeful person. That's what's driven me my whole life. But I'm also very sober about what are the challenges we have and how we have to address them. And instead of pointing my finger and complaining about the challenges, I get down and I roll my sleeves up and try to address them.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. That was Deputy Mayor Sharon Owens. Once again, the Democratic Party mayoral primary in Syracuse is June 24th, and early voting starts on June 14th. Deputy Mayor Owens, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest is hosted and produced by Grant Reher. The program is edited by Mark Levonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.